We're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita text, chapter 16, verses 26 to 31. So the purport is at the end of text 31. Last Sunday we left at text 25, and there was a nice purport. So I'll just read out from 26 onwards. Translation. Vrindavan Das Thakur has previously elaborately described this. That which is clear need not be scrutinized for good qualities and faults. Text 27. Translation. Offering my obeisance to Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, I shall try to describe that portion of the Lord's analysis which, when he heard it, made the Digvijaya feel himself condemned. Text 28. On one full moon night, the Lord was sitting on the bank of the Ganges with his many disciples and discussing literary topics. Text 29. Coincidentally, Keshava Kashmiri Pandit also came there. While offering his prayers to Mother Ganges, he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Text 30. The Lord received him with adoration. But because Keshava Kashmiri was very proud, he talked to the Lord very inconsiderately. And that brings us to text 31. Translation. I understand that you are a teacher of grammar. Sorry. It's me. I'll say it again. I understand that you are a teacher of grammar, he said, and that your name is Nimai Pandit. People speak very highly of your teaching of beginner's grammar. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Formerly, Sanskrit schools first taught grammar very thoroughly, and this system continues even now. A student was supposed to study grammar carefully for 12 years in the beginning of his life, because if one is expert in the grammar of the Sanskrit language, all the shastras are open to him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was famous for teaching grammar to students, and therefore Keshava Kashmiri first referred to his position as a teacher of grammar. He was very proud of his literary career. He was far above the first lessons of grammar, and so he thought the position of Nimai Pandit was not at all comparable to his own. Om Agyanatim Inundasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Charu Swaminiti Namine Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaste Satarine Vanchakalpadrupascha Kripasindu Bhayavacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I humbly seek the blessings and mercy of the assembled and unassembled Vaishnavas today and all the eternal days to come, for you all can fulfill the desires of everyone, just like desire trees, and you are all full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls such as moi. Last Sunday, I'm afraid my notes are kind of further away. I should have got my cushion, and my glasses can just about take it. But last Sunday, His Grace Kartik Chandra Prabhu gave the class, and certainly it was exceptionally informative, educational, and certainly very scholarly. And he gave a very concise history of this particular pastime with the Digbijoy, Keshava Kashmiri. Of course, I am of the opinion that Kartik Chandra Prabhu is one of our Digbijays within the ISKCON, within our ISKCON, many of our Digbijays. However, not so proud as the Digbijays are. So I very much relished that class of his last week. In the Chaitanya Bhagwat, chapter 13, is very much detailed on the pastime of how the Lord defeats the Digbijay Pandit, Keshava Kashmiri, and who the Pandit who for 3 hours continuously chants the prayers in glorification of Mother Ganga. And literally these prayers, can you imagine for 3 hours? I mean, chanting, you know, for 2 hours out of 16 rounds continuously, with inattentively is quite a task. And then, you know, there's always falling asleep as well. But here, the Pandit, Digbijay, continuously, like a cyclone, and I could just imagine like a machine gun, continuously these prayers, bombarding the Lord, because this is transcendental ammo. The Digbijay, throughout all the provinces, he's been debating. And this is like a battleground, scholarly battleground. It's mentioned that he's even been to Gujarat, the state of Gujarat. Now, that's my origin. And I thought, well, that was probably the worst part of India. No one would debate there. But this Digbijay has been there. And he's conquered. He's conquered everywhere. And here he is, on the bank of the Ganga, informally, and the Lord has invited him to kindly offer prayers to the Ganges. Informally, not in debate. Of course, prior to him appearing in Navadvip and entering Navadvip, when he enters the province of Navadvip, which at that time was the seat of debate, of scholars. And as he enters this on this humongous elephant with his entire entourage, the pandits of Navadvip are fearful. They literally hide because they don't want to be confronted by him. Because they thought that as soon as they debate and they're defeated, then naturally they have to surrender. So the Lord makes this arrangement. And the Lord is literally only in his early teens, 12, 13, a young boy, on the banks of the Ganga. And very informally, the pundit appears there. He strolls down there and he takes darshan of the Lord. Of course, when he sees the Lord, he's actually mesmerized. Because of the effulgence of the Lord. And he's thinking, who is this personality? At first he himself is bewildered. And then the Lord very politely, in a very humble manner, invites him to offer prayers in purification of the Ganga. And in that way, when he literally bombards like a cyclone and he's firing away for a continuous 3 hours, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, the Lord simply in a moment defeats him. Simply in a moment. And thereafter, the students of the Lord, the many pupils who are there, young boys, they giggle and they laugh at the seemingly defeat of this powerful Digvijaya. And the Digvijaya, he is, the Keshava Kashmiri, he's stunned at that immediate defeat. He couldn't retaliate. His intelligence, his buddhi is just, you know, removed. It's eradicated. The boys are giggling and laughing that, wow, there's no response by this profound scholar. The Lord immediately hushes the boys that, no, don't mock him. Be quiet. He hushes them down. And then, of course, Mahaprabhu is so merciful. He then addresses the pundit that, look, you know, this is not a formal debate. I tell you what, it's late. You've offered prayers very nicely. There have been some faults. He outlines 5 faults. Jai Shri Sharada Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitarama Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gornitai Bhagavan ki jai, Jagat Puru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Nimai Pandit, he said, look, you know, don't worry. Sleep on it. Go overnight and contemplate. And then come back in the early hours of the morning and we will discuss further. This is not formal. You don't need to, you know, sign any contract for this debate. It's informal. So the Digvijaya, he rests. And of course, we all know the pastime. Goddess Saraswati appears in his dream and literally chastises him. That, don't you know who this personality is? This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom you've engaged in debate. So you immediately should surrender unto him. Immediately. And of course, the following morning, he does do that. He immediately surrenders, and hence, he then in due course becomes a very, very devout devotee of the Lord. So a wonderful pastime has been very elaborately explained, and quite honestly, Kartik Chandraprabhu has stolen my thunder, because I was going to give more detail, but he did a much better job than I could. But one thing he didn't quite mention is that if one does sincerely and wholeheartedly devotes to the demigods, surrenders onto the demigods, eventually the particular demigod he or she worships will direct them, that devotee, to the right path. Which is in this case, Mother Saraswati has directed the Digvijaya onto the right path. So if one surrenders, even to the demigods, then eventually you will, come to the right path of surrendering onto the Supreme Lord. I vividly recollect one February morning, a few years back, it was Shivratri. And it was a Bhagavatam class, very few devotees in the temple room, and I was giving Bhagavatam class. And because it was Shivratri, I thought, let's really talk about Lord Shiva and glorify him. He is the Param Vaishnav. And I just dedicated the entire class. And of course, after the class, one very unique personality came to me, and she does this quite often, and she said, Prabhu, we all know who that is, Prabhu, were you a Shiva Bhakta in your previous existence prior to you coming to ISKCON. And I always like to tease her. I was one of those individuals who enjoyed teasing the mother. And I said to her, Mataji, yes, I was a devout Shivite. And I'm so attached to Lord Shiva, and he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I was teasing. Prabhu, what are you talking about? And then, of course, I did have to say to her that, no, mother, I wish I was a devout devotee of Lord Shiva. Unfortunately, prior to coming to ISKCON, I was some kind of a nonsense. Not really a devotee at all, of no one, a devotee of Mother Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord. It was quite a pleasure, and I know that some of you devotees who had given class, and she would come up to you during the day even, and appreciate what you've said. Now, in this 16th chapter entitled "The Pastimes of the Lord in His Childhood and Youth," fully describes Lord Gauranga's Kaishorya Leela. Now, during this time, he studied deeply and was victorious over greatly learned scholars, the Digvijaya being one of them. At this time, he also sports in the water, and he goes to East Bengal to secure financial matters, cultivate knowledge, and introduce the Sankirtan movement. And there he met Tapan Mishra, whom he instructed about spiritual advancement and ordered to go to Varanasi. Again, the place of Lord Shiva. While the Lord was touring East Bengal, his consort, Srimati Lakshmi Devi, as it's been mentioned, was bitten by a serpent, or by the serpent of separation, and she left this world. When the Lord returns home, he sees that his mother was overwhelmed with grief because of Lakshmi Devi's death. So, at her request, at the mother's request, the Lord then later marries his second consort, Vishnu Priya Devi, and the prayers of the Digvijayi, the Lord found five kinds of literary ornaments and five kinds of literary faults, and so defeating the pundit. And that's we've got so far. We've the purport of verse 25. Srila Prabhupada has stated that in the Bhakti Ratnakara by Srila Narahari Chakraborty Thakur, Prabhupada has mentioned Keshava Kashmiri and lists his predecessors in the distinct succession of the Nimbarka Sampradaya. Okay. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, of course, it was read last week by Kartik Chandra, so at least I can mention something on that purport. Srila Prabhupada states, firstly, Srinivas Acharya. Now, Srinivas Acharya was one of the Parampara Acharyas there. Now, prior to him is Nimbarka. And now this is interesting, because prior to Srinivas Acharya is Nimbarka, and before Nimbarka is Narada. And before Narada are the four Kumaras, the Chatushan, and before them is Hansa. And before Lord Hansa is, in actual fact, Lord Narayan. And he is at the top of this parampara, number one, is Lord Narayan. And this information is given to us by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, in his book entitled The Life and Teachings of the Four Acharyas. Last year, during July, I went on a retreat with my wife and son to Radhadesh, and Vishnumurti Prabhu gave me the book, and it was truly fascinating, and I was so keen on reading it, so I thought that I'd speak a little on this book of the four bona fide sampradayas. Firstly, we have Sri Vishnu Swami, and who is the Acharya, and the teachings are known as Sud Advaita Vad. Vad means the path or the marg. Sud Advaita, and this particular philosophy stipulates that Lord Vishnu is the supreme, and the jivas are eternally subordinate to him. And the origin is Lord Shiva. And the Pushti Marga currently representing this particular sampradaya. And then we have, secondly, the Nimbarka, or the Nimbaditya. And he is the Acharya, the Nimbarka sampradaya. And the teachings are Chinta Advaita Advaitavad. This is where the jiva and the Lord are simultaneously one and different from each other. Chinta Advaita Advaitavad. And the origin of this sampradaya are the Chatushana, in particular Shonaka Rishi. And then thirdly, we have Ramanuja. He's the Acharya. And his teachings are Visistadvaitavad, which is non-dualism, non-dualism meaning Advaita with uniqueness. And the origin is none other than Lakshmi Devi herself. And then the fourth sampradaya is, of course, our sampradaya. Madhvacharya is the Acharya. And Mahaprabhu accepted this particular sampradaya. And the teaching is Dvaitavad. Dvaita without the Advaita. Dvaita specifically meaning duality, dualism. The Lord and the jivas exist as independent realities distinctively. And the origin is our Lord Brahma. He's the origin, and hence we are named as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So this is our lineage. It has been mentioned that the holy formula, the Maha Mantra, that is not received from an authorized dispic succession will never bear fruit. Now that's quite heavy. If the Maha Mantra is not accepted by an authoritative dispic succession, sampradaya, it will never bear fruit. And this is why in this age of Kali, these four great acharyas have merged and established the four Vaishnav dispic successions, coming from Lord Brahma, Rudra, Lakshmi and the four Kumaras. These great four leaders have manifested their four authorized paramparas from the holy dham of Puri. I was quite fascinated when I read that. Jagannath Puri is where everything originated. The four sampradayas had their own mats at Jagannath Puri. It was Lord Chaitanya who widely distributed their essential conclusions. It is understood that Lakshmi Devi was the first to inaugurate the Sampradaya, followed by Lord Brahma, and then Lord Shiva, and finally the four Kumaras. However, Vishnu Swami was the first of the Acharyas who appeared, and then Nimbarka, followed by Ramanuja, and ending with Madhvacharya. This is the chronological order of the appearance of the Vaishnava Acharyas. If we take a look at Vishnu Swami, there was a powerful, powerful king by the name of Panduvijaya, which you may have come across. And he ruled Pandya Desh in South India. His reign actually began some 300 years before Lord Buddha appeared. 300 years after the appearance of Lord Buddha. After the appearance of Lord Buddha. And 300 years BC, which is before Christ. And being a very serious Vaishnav devotee, he preached the worship of Lord Vishnu and drove out the influence of Buddhism from Pandya Desh. Now, with the help of his priest, because every king has a priest, the head priest, with the help of his priest by the name of Devashwara, and his prince, the king had a Rajkumar, who was very influential. Raja Panduvijaya delivered the deities of Lord Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra from the clutches of, wait for it, from the clutches of the Buddhists. The Buddhists had taken over Jagannath Puri. Can you imagine that? And they had called the deity of Lord Jagannath as Buddha. Yes, it was quite amusing myself when I read that. And they had called the deity of Balaram, Baladev, as Dharma. And Maharani Subhadra was Sangha. So eventually the king drove them out. And when the worship of Lord Jagannath was re-established by Panduvijaya, the priests of Puri were then called the Pandas, or after the Pandu, after the Maharaj Panduvijaya. And what didn't sit well with me when I came across this particular knowledge was that how is it that Lord Jagannath can tolerate such impersonalism when he himself is so personal? And when you take a look at Lord Jagannath, he's actually very tolerant. In July, when we had the Rath Yatra, you know, I think it was a Sunday this year. And on a Sunday morning, we were glued at home, the three of us were glued at the screen of when, you know, they bring Lord Jagannath out. And it literally takes them 4 hours just to bring him out and get him onto the rut. And he's tossing and turning, and they're twisting him, and they're raising him, and they're continuously like poking his face and adjusting his top attire. And he's tolerating all of this. And he's got a huge smile. And literally they're hugging him. And I'm thinking, when the Lord is so personal to his devotees, and he has to tolerate the reign of the impersonalists, how can that be? And a wonderful pastime comes to my mind very quickly of when the Lord Jagannath develops an attachment to a young girl. A young girl by the name of Padma. And she sings the Geet Govinda by Jayadev Goswami. And she's just the daughter of a gardener within the compound of Jagannath Puri, and as she's picking flowers with her father, our gardener here is Narahari Rupa, and I do believe he does have a young daughter. I've never seen her picking flowers here, but this particular daughter of the head gardener by the name of Padma is picking her flowers and she's singing the Git Govind. And the Lord is attracted to this on the altar. And the Lord, it's said that he comes off the altar and he's running after this young girl as she's picking flowers. You know, somehow the Lord manifests his legs. And as he's going in between the grooves, and you know, there were rose, the rose twigs, and as we all know, they're thorns. Thorns, you know, the roses have their thorns. And the Lord's attire is literally gets caught and it strips away. And then eventually when he comes back on the altar, the pandas, the priests, realize that, hang on, the Lord's attire, his dress is in shreds. How can that be? And so they immediately remove and put another set on. And this occurs quite regularly. And then they discover that it's because of this girl. So they ban her from singing. And the Lord is dejected. After some time, he cannot tolerate. And he summons, literally in a dream, he summons the head priest, can you have this girl back and sing? And that became a fixed program within the temple duties. The girl was invited again, Padma, and she sang the Git Govind, and the Lord was delighted. Such personalism. And yet, the Lord has to tolerate this worship of impersonalists. Lord Jagannath was very, very pleased with the priest, Devaswara, the head priest of the king. So the Lord, it is said, awarded him a son who was empowered to preach. And his name was Devatanu. And this Devatanu accepts the tree dandi sannyas according to the Vaishnav tradition. And he is known as Vishnu Swami. He's the first acharya. And Srila Vallabha Bhatta was the son of Sri Lakshman. And Vallabha Bhatta later on became the famous Vallabhacharya. And now, according to his followers, he was a descendant of the third Vishnu Swami. How? I don't know. The third Vishnu Swami, he's the descendant. And the Siddhant preached by Sri Vishnu Swami is that of the jivas are part and parcels of the absolute truth. And this is known as Sudh Advaita Marg. Maya is the energy of the absolute truth. And the material world and the material energy is the effect of the energy of the absolute truth. So this is the philosophy. And Sri Vishnu Swami was a worshipper of Lord Nrsimhadev under the subordination of Rudra. And the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya is practically extinct. It literally no longer exists. Although Sri Vallabhacharya advertised himself as a member of the Sampradaya, there are differences between his opinions and the Siddhant preached by the Sri Vishnu Swami, who appeared 300 BC. And then, of course, we have Acharya Nimbadvaita or Nimbarka. Towards the end of Dwarpar Yuga, a pious sage named Aruni, who was a devotee of Lord Vishnu, lived in the country of Tailangadesh, again South India, in the southern province, Tailangadesh. And with his wife, Jayanti Devi, in order to protect the Sanatan Dharma, the Lord decided to send an empowered incarnation to the holy land of Bharatvarsh. The jewel-like child, a jewel-like child as brilliant as the sun, appeared in this world in the evening of a full moon. A very great detail is given in the month of Kartik. And this son of Srimad Aruni and Devi Jayanti, he became Nimbarka. And why Nimbarka? Because he apparently, as a toddler, climbs a neem tree. Now, if my son were to climb a neem tree, his mother would freak out. But he climbed a neem tree, and Arka means the sun. He was attempting to reach the sun. Hence, he was named Nimbarka, or Nimb Aditya, Nimba Vibhasu. These three names were given to him. And then we have Sri Ramanujacharya, whom we know quite a lot of. There's a nice book written. Ramanujacharya appeared 1017 AD and left this world 120 odd years later, 1137 AD. And he appeared in the village of Mahabhuta Puri at midday. Such detail is given of his appearance. Furthermore, he appeared on a Thursday. In the womb of Srimati Kantimati and fathered by Keshava Acharya. And this is Ramanuja. Srimati Kantimati was the sister of Shailapurna. Shailapurna was a disciple of Jamuna Acharya. Jamuna Acharya resided in Sri Rangam. And the child was named Lakshman. Ramanuja was named Lakshman as a child. Why? Because he resembled Lord Lakshman. His appearance was that of Lord Lakshman. And hence they named him Lakshman. One very interesting pastime comes to my mind. Very sweet pastime. Once the Acharya Ramanuja was sitting on the bank of a river, honoring prasad. And he takes prasad and he tosses some remnants into the water. And immediately two Vishnudevas appear, Narayan form, and they return back home, back to Godhead. Of course, the fish who were in that particular area took that remnants and immediately were delivered. And this was witnessed by the not only just the Acharya, but all the disciples there who were present. And they asked the Acharya, Gurudev, Guru Maharaj, we are always regularly taking your remnants. So why are we not receiving the Vishnu form and liberated into, you know, and going back home, back to Godhead? And his answer was, well, because you guys are accepting my remnants with some offense. Whereas the fish who are so innocent are accepting my remnants without any offense, and hence they have achieved Vaikuntha. Such was the power of this unique personality. And then we have finally the fourth Acharya, Madhva Acharya. Madhva Acharya appeared some 700 years ago in the book compiled by Bhaktisiddhanta. It's mentioned 698 years. But some 700 years ago, he appeared, and the Madhva means happiness. And the letter V is referring to knowledge, means knowledge. So Madhva is referring to blissful knowledge, or Ananta Tirtha, meaning blissful knowledge. And this Acharya, Madhva Acharya, who is within our lineage, compiles a staggering 32,000 pieces of literature. Now, can you imagine compiling 700 years ago, without the modern gadgets of the laptop, 32,000 pieces of literature? Incredible. Now, although we technically belong to the Sri Madhva Sampradaya, because it was accepted by Lord Chaitanya, We do not concern ourselves very much with the particular sampradaya. And in Treta Yuga, Vayudev appears as Hanuman. If you recollect, in Treta Yuga, during the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra, Vayu is Hanuman. And in Dwarpara Yuga, Vayu appears as Bhimshen. As we know, the five Pandavas, and Bhimshen is Vayu. Now in Kali, Vayu appears as Srimadvacharya. Fascinating. It has been said that Srimadva learned the Vedic conclusions from Lord Nrisimha himself. Lord Nrisimha appeared to him, and the Acharya learned all the Vedic conclusions from the Lord himself. So can you imagine what a personality he was? And there are nine truths according to Srimadva, and I won't list them due to time constraints. Srila Madhva Acharya, the great Acharya, disappeared whilst explaining his commentary on the Aitariya Upanishad in the temple of Ananteshwar, and he was aged 79, and he passed on. Now, we know that the disappearance of an Acharya, or a pure devotee for that matter, is not ordinary. I've witnessed in my life three particular disappearances, and one was a devout devotee. But we know that the disappearance of an Acharya is not ordinary. Even our modern day saint who lived amongst us, and you all know whom I'm talking about, I didn't get the opportunity to say anything about her during the memorial, so I thought, let me grasp this opportunity now. And the disappearance of Mother Kulanganath was not ordinary, by far. It was truly unique on Janmasmi Day, and several days prior to her departing, we were preparing for her departure. And as many of you devotees know, I'm the humble undertaker of the manor. The undertaker. And I'm thinking, I hope Mataji doesn't leave during the patron dinner, which was 8 days prior to Janmashtami, or anywhere during Janmashtami, because, you know, we're so busy. And it would be nice if she's with us. I mean, this is my selfish mentality. And knowing perfectly well that due to the busy schedule, I'm thinking I'm very busy. Of course, I don't really do much anyway. And of course, when she did decide to leave us at around 6:35 in the evening, or was it 7? 6:47, thank you very much, Mataji. I thought it was 6:35. 6:47, she departs during the Janmasmi Dithi. And I'm thinking, oh my Lord. And that very evening we had a meeting upstairs in the temple president's office, going through what we're going to do. And because we had to have the funeral on Janmasmi Day itself. And I vividly recollect a few years prior, when Mataji had visited the holy dham of Vrindavan, and when she comes back, and then I realized that she had been in India, and I asked her that, you've lost so much weight, you know, you've become very thin. Were you eating properly in India? Why are you so thin? And she says, Prabhu. And when she responded to that, and I was quite alarmed, and she said to me, I've lost weight, and this was a few years ago. I've lost weight. Why? Because to make your life easier. And at first I'm thinking, what's she on about? And she kind of, you know, persisted. And of course, what she meant is to so that we could easily carry her body. That's what she meant. And so I do recollect, in her room, in the ashram, her body was very thin, frail. And as we then moved her transcendental body, I was somewhat in the middle. There were devotees at her feet and at her head. And when we lifted her, and I thought, well, she's quite heavy. She's not light. And her back was very warm. And of course, that's due to the rigor mortis setting in. And so it was quite a unique experience. Of course, no ordinary, a very first personality to my recollection who has, left within the Dham. Within the Dham. Who has left within the Dham? Even Jiva Patiprabhu. He left at Watford General, I believe. And we had his, wonderful ceremony here in the library. But Mother Kalangnath was the very first. So certainly not at all ordinary. And every time I had met her, I'd like to tease her. My last teasing session with her was in June of this year, the 2nd of June, on the engagement celebration of our Samyak in Harrow. And Mataji appeared with one of the Matajis, I believe. Mother Kalangnath comes and I'm seated there, and I get up at the entrance. And, she's asking, is this the right place? And I say to her, no, you've come at the wrong place. And actually, the engagement is next week. And she's confused. And I'm teasing her. And I could see that it was the wrong thing for me to say. I shouldn't have teased her, for she was actually quite weak at that time. And then the Mataji who was with her reassured her, no, we are at the right place. And then, of course, I escort her through. But that was the last time I had the opportunity of that particular exchange. Of course, every time I do see her, she always glorifies Haripriya. Never says anything good about me. She knows that I'm a nonsense anyway. And at one time, she says to me, Prabhu, your wife is such a nice devotee. And I remember when Haripriya used to crochet these slippers for her. Very nice woolly slippers, pure white. And on two or three occasions, and she very much appreciated these slippers. I'm sure she actually used them. Mother Kalangnath ki jai. There's a hand up, but I haven't quite finished. During the era of Maharaj Pandavijaya, prior to the impersonalists and the Buddhists had controlled Lord Jagannath, and I still can't fail, I can't recollect or comprehend how the impersonalists got in there and took over. Lord Nityananda's first visit to Jagannath Puri was quite astounding. If one dwells into that pastime, Lord Nityananda just rushes to the altar. And he rushes to the altar and he just embraces Lord Jagannath, hugs Lord Jagannath. And if you can imagine, Lord Jagannath is probably this wide. And Lord Nityananda, with elongated arms, goes all the way round to the back. And he just won't let go of Lord Jagannath. The Pandas are thinking, who is this person? First of all, they attempt to refrain him. They try to control the Lord, but the Lord is as if he's got a force field right round him. No one can touch him. As soon as a panda just comes near the Lord, they go bouncing back. They literally go flying. Now, if you can imagine, so many pandas. I was very fearful when I first went to Jagannath Puri, and I entered the temple of Sakshi Gopal. And I was there, and all these pandas came rushing to me. Of course, I was with a group of devotees, and they just sat me down. And I was fearful. I thought they're going to beat me up. And one of the pandas, and I was all around, and this group of devotees I was with just abandoned me, left me there. And one of these pandas there, they crushed a cookie. I don't think it was a digestive. They crushed this cookie, mixed it with the reti, the holy dust of Sakshi Gopal there, and then ordered me to make you a Hindu, you've got to eat this. And of course I'm thinking, fine, yeah, I mean there's the holy dust. And I'm eating. My first morsel goes in with the holy dust, and I'm not anywhere near being pure at all. And I'm thinking, why am I eating this mug? And fortunately for me, one of my god brothers, who's Orion, rescues me. He comes in and he just grabs my hand and takes me away. And so, if you can imagine, Lord Nityananda, he's rushing to the altar. The pandas can't touch him. And the Lord just bounces onto the altar, because the altar itself is Shalagram Shila. Of you, Prabhus, all of you, who's not been to Jagannath Puri? You haven't been. Mataji, you haven't been. My Lord. Okay, there's a gentleman at the back. That's unheard of. You must go to Jagannath Puri. If you go there, you know, in the shrine, there's the Simba Dwara, and Nityananda is rushing through. He bounces onto the altar, grabs Lord Jagannath, and doesn't let go of him. Okay, just doesn't let go of him. And quite a while later, all the Pandavas are really attempting so hard to just, you know, try and take him off the altar. Of course, with no avail. Because as soon as they come anywhere near the altar, there literally is a transcendental force field. They can't touch him. Eventually, it's mentioned to the Lord that Gauranga Mahaprabhu has fainted and he's at the house of Sarvabhum Bhattacharya. And that kind of sinks, and he then comes off the altar. And Lochandas Thakur has very nicely compiled a beautiful, beautiful bhajan. And I wanted to just conclude this morning's class by just reading out the verses. And this bhajan or song is entitled Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Rai. Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Rai. Meaning, Sri Nityananda Prabhu never gets angry. He never gets angry. He is, now there are only five verses, so I'm not going to go on and on. He is always in ecstasy, supreme bliss. He has no false ego. The Lord has no false ego, even though he is Avadhut. He wanders to every town and village in Nadia, chanting Hare Krishna, dancing and offering Krishna Prema to everyone indiscriminately. That's very important. Offering indiscriminately. Sri Nitai goes to every doorstep and knocks on the door, tap, tap, tap. The Thakur is singing, tap, tap, tap. He goes to those who are very much distressed, degraded, and fallen. He goes to them and gives them Krishna Prema. He says, please chant. Please chant. Please chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If they do not chant and they shut the door, then he rolls there on the ground and cries. Now I wish the Lord would knock on my door, but he obviously never will. For why would he? Whomever he meets, catching a straw between his teeth, he begs, oh brothers, please do the bhajan of Sri Gaura Hari and purchase me, purchase me, purchase me. Nityananda is addressing all the, you know, door-to-door walas. Say this. Lord Nityananda rolls on the ground in the dust, cries and sheds tears, looking like a mountain of gold rolling on the ground. And finally, the Thakur ends. Such a merciful incarnation is Lord Nityananda. If someone doesn't develop love for such an incarnation as Lord Sri Nityananda Ram, Lord Chandas says, such a sinful person wastes his life, remaining in the cycle of birth and death. He cannot be delivered. He cannot be delivered. Nityananda Rama ki jai. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. And I shall conclude here.